Welcome to Gima's Tales for Children. Each week we visit a different part of the world to hear stories, legends, and myths. Some of these stories are so old that the origin has been lost in time. Some are new, and some are timeless. Join us this week as we tell stories about fire. Our little town is near the largest fire in the country right now, so it seemed appropriate to find some stories about fire. Fire is something humans made and animals could not, and so it protected us. There are plants that only release their seeds when a fire burns them. For further information about fire for children, I suggest www.sciencekids.co.nz. Our first tale about fire is from New Zealand. Here is How Maui Brought Fire to the World. One evening after eating a hearty meal, Maui lay beside his fire staring into the flames. He watched the flames flicker and dance and thought to himself, "I wonder where fire comes from." Maui, being the curious person that he was, decided that he needed to find out. In the middle of the night, while everyone was sleeping, Maui went from village to village and extinguished all the fires until not a single fire burned in the world. He then went back to his warai, or hut, and waited. The next morning there was an uproar in the village. "How can we cook our breakfast? There's no fire," called a worried mother. "We can't possibly live without fire," the villagers said to one another. The people of the village were very frightened. They asked Taranga, who was their medicine woman, to help solve the problem. "Someone will have to go and see the great goddess Mahuika and ask her for fire," said Taranga. None of the villagers were eager to meet Mahuika. They had all heard of the scorching mountain where she lived. So Maui offered to set out in search of Mahuika, secretly glad that his plan had worked. "Be very careful," said Taranga. "Although you are a descendant of Mahuika, she will not take kindly to you if you try and trick her." "I'll find the great ancestress Mahuika and bring back fire to the world," Maui assured her. Maui walked to the scorching mountain to the end of the earth, following the instructions of the Taranga, and found a huge mountain glowing red-hot with heat. At the base of the mountain, Maui saw a cave entrance. Before he entered, Maui whispered a special karakia to himself as protection from what lay beyond. But nothing could prepare Maui for what he saw when he entered the sacred mountain of Mahuika. Mahuika, the goddess, rose up before him, fire burning from every pore of her body, her hair a mass of flames, her arms outstretched and with only black holes where her eyes once were. She sniffed the air. "Who is the mortal that dares to enter my dwelling?" Maui gathered the courage to speak. "It is I, Maui, son of Taranga." "Ha!" yelled Mahuika. "Maui, the son of Taranga?" "Yes, the last born. Maui Tiki Tiki Ataranga." "Well then, Maui Tiki Tiki Ataranga, welcome, welcome to the essence of the flame. Welcome, my grandchild." Mahuika stepped closer to Maui, taking a deep sniff of his scent. Maui stood completely still, even though the flames from Mahuika's skin were unbearably hot. "So why do you come, Maui Tiki Tiki Ataranga?" Mahuika finally asked. Maui said, "The fires of the world have been extinguished. I have come to ask you for fire." Mahuika listened carefully to Maui, and then she laughed. She pulled a fingernail from one of her burning fingers and gave it to him. "Take this fire as a gift to your people. Honor this fire as you honor me." So Maui left the house of Mahuika, taking with him the fingernail of fire. As Maui walked along the side of the road, he thought to himself, "What if Mahuika had no fire left? Then where would she get her fire from?" Maui couldn't contain his curiosity. He quickly threw the fingernail into a stream and headed back to Mahuika's cave. "I tripped and fell," said Maui. "Could I please have another?" Mahuika was in a good mood. She hadn't spoken to someone in quite some time, and she liked Maui. She gladly gave Maui another of her fingernails. But Maui soon extinguished this fingernail as well, and returned to Mahuika with another excuse. "A fish splashed my flame as I was crossing the river," Maui said. Mahuika provided another of her fingernails, not suspecting that she was being tricked. This continued for most of the day until Mahuika had used all her fingernails and had even given up all but one of her toenails. When Maui returned to ask for another, Mahuika was furious. She knew Maui had been tricking her and threw the burning toenail to the ground. Instantly, Maui was surrounded by fire and chased from the cave. Maui changed himself into a hawk and escaped to the sky, but the flames burned so high that they singed the underside of his wings, turning them a glowing red. Maui dived towards a river, hoping to avoid the flames in the coolness of the water, but the immense heat made the water boil. Maui was desperate. He called on his ancestor, Tahirihiritia. Then a mass of clouds gathered, and a torrent of rain fell to put out the many fires. Mahuika's mountain of fire no longer burned hot. Mahuika had lost much of her power, but still she was not giving up. She took her very last toenail and threw it at Maui in anger. The toenail of fire missed Maui and flew into the trees, planting itself in the Mahoe tree, the Totara, the Patete, the Pocatea, and the Kaikomako trees. These trees cherished and held on to the fires of Mahuika, considering it a great gift. When Maui returned to his village, he didn't bring back fire as the villagers had expected. Instead, he brought back dry wood from the Kaikomako tree and showed them how to rub the dry sticks together, forming friction which would eventually start a fire. The villagers were very happy to be able to cook their food once more and to have the warmth of their fires at night to comfort them. Maui satisfied his curiosity in finding the origin of fire, although he very nearly paid the ultimate price in doing so. To this day, the kahu, the native hawk of Aotearoa, still retains the red singed feathers on the underside of its wings, a reminder of how close Maui was to death. This is a story of how Maui brought fire to the world. Our next story is a myth from the country of Greece. Here is How Prometheus Brought Fire to Man. Many years ago, according to the stories told by the people of ancient Greece, there lived two brothers who were not like other men or like the gods and goddesses of Mount Olympus. They were the sons of one of the Titans who had fought against Zeus and been sent in chains to the prison of the lower world. The name of the elder of these brothers was Prometheus, which means forethought. Prometheus was always thinking of the future and making things ready for what might happen tomorrow, or next week, or next year, or even in 100 years' time. The younger was called Epimetheus, which means afterthought. Epimetheus was always so busy thinking of yesterday, or last year, or 100 years ago, that he never worried at all about what might come across to pass in the future. Prometheus did not want to live amongst the clouds on Mount Olympus. He was too busy for that. While the gods were spending their time in idleness, drinking nectar and eating ambrosia, he was planning on how to make the world wiser and better than it had ever been before. So instead of living on Olympus, Prometheus went out amongst men to live with them and help them, and he quickly noticed they were no longer happy as they had been during the golden days when Cronos, the Titan, was king. He found them living in caves and in holes of the earth, shivering with the cold because there was no fire, dying of starvation, hunted by wild beasts and by one another, the most miserable of all living creatures. If they only had fire, said Prometheus to himself, they could at least warm themselves and cook their food, and after a while they could learn to make tools and build themselves houses. Without fire, they are worse off than the beasts. Prometheus went boldly to Zeus and begged him to give fire to the people so that they might have a little comfort through the long, dreary months of winter. I will not, said Zeus. Not one spark will I share with them, for if men had fire, they might become strong and wise like us, and after a while they would drive us out of our kingdom. Besides, fire is a dangerous tool, and they are too poor and ignorant to be trusted with it. It is better that we on Mount Olympus rule the world without threat, so all can be happy. Prometheus didn't answer, but he had set his heart on helping mankind, and he did not give up. As he was walking by the seashore, he found a tall stalk of fennel. He broke it off and then saw that its hollow center was filled with a dry, soft substance which would burn slowly and stay alight for a long time. He carried the stalk with him as he began a long journey to the top of Mount Olympus. "Mankind shall have fire, despite what Zeus has decided," he said to himself. And with that thought, he snuck quietly into Zeus's domain and stole a spark from Zeus's own lightning bolt. Prometheus touched the end of the long reed to the spark, and the dry substance within it caught on fire and burned slowly. Prometheus hurried back to his own land, carrying with him the precious spark hidden in the hollow center of the plant. When he reached home, he called some of the shivering people from their caves and built a fire for them and showed them how to warm themselves by it and use it to cook their food. Men and women gathered round the fire and were warm and happy and thankful to Prometheus for the wonderful gift which he had brought to them. One chilly winter evening, Zeus gazed down from Mount Olympus and noticed fires burning cheerfully at the hearths of men and women in every village across the land. It did not take him long to realize that Prometheus had disobeyed him and given fire to man. Zeus was very angry and ordered that Prometheus be chained to the side of a mountain to suffer there for all eternity. And there Prometheus stayed, thinking of the future, happy in the knowledge that he had given fire to men. There is a happy ending for Prometheus. He was finally rescued by Hercules, the mortal son of Zeus. But that is a story for another day. Our last story comes from Russia. Here, with a little editing by this storyteller, is The Firebird. Once upon a time, there was a tsar named Barendi, who had three sons. The tsar's palace was surrounded by a beautiful orchard, and among the trees in the orchard was a wonderful apple tree which bore golden apples. One day, the tsar discovered that someone was getting into the orchard and stealing his golden apples. He was furious and sent his guards to catch the thief. But though they watched all night, they were quite unsuccessful. The tsar was so upset at the loss of his golden apples that he lost his appetite too. His sons tried to comfort him, and the eldest told him, "I will go and guard the orchard against the thief tonight, father." And he went off to the orchard. But although he arrived there quite early in the evening and walked about for some time, he saw no one. So he lay down on a grassy bank and soon fell asleep. Next morning his father asked him, "Well, have you good news for me? Did you see the thief?" "No, father," his son answered. "I did not sleep a wink all night. I did not even close my eyes, but I saw no one." The following night the tsar's second son went to guard the orchard, but he too slept all night, and the next morning he told his father he too had seen no sign of a thief, although he had not closed his eyes. Now it was the turn of the youngest brother, Prince Ivan, to guard the orchard, and he was so anxious not to miss the thief that he was afraid even to sit down, let alone to lie down. When he felt he was getting drowsy, he washed his face with dew, and this made him wide awake again. About halfway through the night, he thought he saw a light in the orchard. It grew brighter and brighter until all the trees were lit up. Then he saw that the light was coming from a firebird, which was sitting on the apple tree and pecking at the golden apples. So he crept up very quietly to the tree and caught hold of the bird by the tail. But the firebird spread its wings and flew away, leaving only one tail feather in Prince Ivan's hand. Next morning, when he went to report to his father, the tsar asked him, "Well, Ivan, did you see the thief?" "Dear father," Ivan answered, "I cannot say I caught him, but I have found out who is eating our apples, and I have brought you a tail feather in proof. It's the firebird." The tsar took the feather and looked at it, and no longer felt sorrowful, but he thought a great deal about the firebird, and one day he sent for his sons and told them, "My dear children, I want you to saddle good horses and ride forth into the world to see whether you can find and bring back the firebird." The young men bowed to their father, saddled good horses, and set out on their travels, the eldest in one direction, the second son in another, and Prince Ivan in a third direction. He rode near and far, high and low, along bypaths and byways, until he came to a wide open field a green meadow, and there in the field stood a pillar, and on the pillar these words were written, "Whosoever goes from this pillar on the road straight before him will be cold and hungry. Whosoever goes to the right side will be safe and sound, but his horse will be killed. And whosoever goes to the left side will be killed himself, but his horse will be safe and sound." Prince Ivan read this inscription and went to the right, thinking that although his horse might be killed, he himself would remain alive and would in time get another horse. He rode one day, then a second day, then a third. Suddenly, an enormous gray wolf came toward him and said, "Ah, so it's you, young lad, Prince Ivan. You saw the inscription on the pillar that said that your horse would be killed if you came this way. Why then have you come hither?" When he had said these words, he tore Prince Ivan's horse in twain and ran off to one side. Prince Ivan was sorely grieved for his horse. He shed bitter tears and then continued on foot. He walked a whole day and was utterly exhausted. He was about to sit down and rest for a while when all at once the gray wolf caught up with him and said, "I am sorry for you, Prince Ivan, because you are exhausted from walking. I am also sorry that I ate your good horse. Tell me why you have traveled so far and where are you going?" "My father has sent me to ride through the world until I find the Firebird." "Why, you would have ridden even on your good horse for 3 years and never found the Firebird, for only I know where it lives. I ate your horse, so now I will serve you faithfully and well. Get on my back and hold on tight." Prince Ivan seated himself astride the gray wolf, and it loped away past the green forests and the azure lakes. At last they came to a very high fortress. There the gray wolf told Ivan, "Listen to me and remember what I say. Climb over the wall and do not be afraid. All the guards are asleep. In the attic you will see a small window. In the window hangs a golden cage, and in that cage is the Firebird. Take the bird and hide it under your coat, but be sure not to touch the cage." Prince Ivan climbed over the wall and saw the attic, and just as the wolf had said, in the attic window a golden cage was hanging, and the Firebird was in that cage. He took out the bird and put it under his coat, but as he looked at the golden cage, he could not help coveting it. It was made of precious gold. How could he leave it behind? He completely forgot what the wolf had told him. But as soon as he touched the cage, the alarm was sounded all through the fortress. Drums rolled and trumpets blared. The guards woke up, captured Prince Ivan, and took him to Tsar Afron. The Tsar was furious at this attempt to steal the Firebird and the cage, and asked the prince, "Who are you and where are you from?" "I am Prince Ivan, the son of Tsar Barendi," Ivan replied. "How shameful! The son of a Tsar coming here to steal?" the Tsar exclaimed. "That is as may be," the prince retorted. "But your bird flew to our orchard and stole the golden apples." "In that case, you should have come to me and asked me for the Firebird, and I would have given it to you out of respect for your father. But now I shall see to it that all the world knows of your behavior. And in order to earn my forgiveness, you will have to enter my service. A certain Tsar Kusman has a horse with a golden mane. Bring that horse to me, and I will give you the Firebird and the cage." Prince Ivan was downcast at the thought of having to undertake such a task, and he went to tell the gray wolf what had happened. But the wolf said to him, "I told you not to touch the cage. Why did you disobey me?" "I know I did wrong, but forgive me, gray wolf." "It is easy to ask forgiveness," the wolf answered. "All right, get on my back again. We will not turn back now." Once more, the gray wolf loped off with Prince Ivan on its back, and at last they came to the fortress where the horse with the golden mane was stabled. Then the wolf told Ivan, "Climb over the wall. Do not be afraid. The guards are asleep. Go to the stable and bring out the horse, but be sure not to touch the bridle you will see hanging there." The prince climbed over the wall into the fortress and saw that the guards were indeed asleep. He went straight to the stable and found the horse with the golden mane, but his eyes fell on a bridle hanging up. It was of gold and studded with precious stones, the only bridle fit for a horse with a golden mane, and he put out his hand to take it. But at once the alarm was sounded all through the fortress. Drums rolled and trumpets blared. The guards woke up, took the prince a prisoner, and led him before Tsar Kusman. "Who are you and where are you from?" the Tsar asked Ivan. "I am Prince Ivan." "To attempt to steal a horse shows little wisdom. Even a peasant would not try to do that. But I will let you off, Prince Ivan, if you agree to enter my service. A certain Tsar named Dalmat has a daughter, the beautiful Helen. Carry her off and bring her to me, and then I will give you the golden maned horse and the golden bridle." At this verdict, Prince Ivan was even more downcast than before. Again, he went to see the Grey Wolf. But the wolf said, "I told you not to touch the bridle. You did not obey my orders." "Nevertheless, forgive me, Grey Wolf," the prince pleaded. "It is all very well saying forgive. All right, get on my back." Once more, the Grey Wolf raced off with Prince Ivan on his back until they came to Tsar Dalmat's fortress. But this time, the Grey Wolf said to the prince, "I am going myself. You start back to Tsar Afron. I will soon catch up." Prince Ivan obediently started to go back, while the Grey Wolf sprang over the fortress wall and into the garden. In the garden, the beautiful Helen was walking with her attendants. The wolf sat behind a bush and watched them, and the moment the princess fell a little way behind her attendants, the wolf seized her, flung her over his back, and scampered away. Ivan had gone on some distance when the Grey Wolf caught up with him, bringing the beautiful Helen sitting on its back. The prince was delighted, but the wolf said, "Quick, get on my back in case we are followed." The prince sat on the wolf's back behind the princess, and the wolf rushed away with them past the green forests and the azure rivers and lakes. At last, they arrived at Tsar Kusman's fortress, but the prince seemed very sad, so the wolf asked, "Why are you silent, Prince Ivan? Are you sad?" "Have I not good reason to be, Grey Wolf? How can I part with this beautiful princess? How can I exchange her for a horse?" "I will see to it that you are not parted from her," the wolf promised. "We will hide her somewhere. Then I will turn myself into the beautiful Princess Helen, and you can lead me to the Tsar." So they hid the princess in a forest hut. Then the Grey Wolf uttered a magic spell, and at once became her living image. Prince Ivan took her to Tsar Kusman. The Tsar was delighted and said, "Thank you, Prince Ivan, for getting me such a beautiful woman for my wife. Take the golden maned horse and the bridle." The prince bridled the horse, mounted it, and rode off to the hut where the true Helen was hidden. He seated her behind him on the horse, and they rode away. Meanwhile, Tsar Kusman made arrangements for his wedding, feasted all day and half the night, and when it was time for bed, he led the mock princess into his bedroom. But when he lay down beside her on the bed, he found he was lying not with a beautiful young wife, but with a Grey Wolf. He was terrified and fled, and the wolf slipped away and out of the fortress. When the wolf caught up with Prince Ivan, it noticed that he was looking sad again, so it asked, "Why are you so thoughtful, Prince?" "I have good reason to be. I am sad to think I have to give up the golden maned horse in exchange for the Firebird." "Do not be downhearted. I will help you," said the wolf. When they arrived at the Tsar Afron's fortress, the wolf said, "You go and hide the horse and the princess. Then I will turn myself into the golden maned horse, and you can take me to Tsar Afron." So they hid Helen and the horse in the forest. The Grey Wolf uttered a magic spell and became a golden maned horse, and Ivan led the horse to the Tsar. Tsar Afron was delighted and gave him the Firebird and the golden cage as well. The prince carried the cage with the bird into the forest, seated the princess on the golden maned horse, and rode off on his journey back to his native country. Meanwhile, Tsar Kusman gave the order for the golden maned horse to be brought to him. But when he tried to mount it, the horse turned into a Grey Wolf. The Tsar was so frightened that he fell to the ground, while the Grey Wolf made good its escape and soon overtook Prince Ivan. "Now I must say goodbye. I cannot come any farther," it told the prince. So Ivan dismounted from his horse and bowed very low 3 times, thanking the Grey Wolf respectfully. But the wolf said, "Do not bid goodbye to me forever. I shall yet be of service to you." How can you be of any further service to me? Ivan thought. All my wishes have come true. He mounted the golden-maned horse and rode away with beautiful Helen and the Firebird. He arrived in his own country, but as he still had some way to go to reach home, he decided to have a rest at midday. So they ate some food, drank water from a spring, and lay down to rest. No sooner had the prince fallen asleep than his brothers happened to ride past and saw him. They had traveled far and wide in search of the Firebird, but of course they had not found it. When they saw their brother lying asleep and noticed that he had the Firebird, the horse with its bridle, and even a beautiful girl, they plotted to kill their brother and take everything for themselves. So they killed Prince Ivan, seated themselves on the golden-maned horse, put beautiful Helen on another, and threatened her, "You must not say a word to anyone when we get home." Then they rode off with the horse, the princess, and the Firebird to their father. They left Prince Ivan lying dead, with the crows already gathering above him. But suddenly, the gray wolf ran up and caught one crow with its young chick. "Crow, you must fly away and bring back to me some sparkling water and some still water," the wolf told the crow. "If you bring back the two sorts of water, I will let your young one go." The crow agreed and flew off while the wolf watched over the chick. In due time, the crow flew back with both the sparkling and the still water. Then the wolf sprinkled Ivan's wounds with the still water, and the wounds healed. It sprinkled him with the sparkling water, and the prince revived. "I have had such a deep sleep," he yawned.
"Yes, you were sleeping very soundly," the gray wolf said. "But for me, you would never have awakened. Your own brothers killed you and carried off all you had gained. Now get on my back, quick."
The wolf raced off in pursuit of the two elder brothers and soon caught up with them. It told them to run far away or he would tear them to pieces. So they did, and were never heard from again. Prince Ivan bowed and thanked the gray wolf once more, and said goodbye to it forever. He mounted the golden-maned horse and rode home with the princess. He had obtained the Firebird for his father, and beautiful Helen his wife for himself. Tsar Berendi was delighted to see him with the Firebird, and asked him to tell of all of his adventures. Prince Ivan told his father how the gray wolf had helped him to win the Firebird, the horse, and the beautiful Helen, how his brothers had killed him while he was asleep, and how the wolf had restored him to life and then told them to leave the country and never return. The Tsar mourned the loss of his two sons, but he was soon comforted by the wedding of Prince Ivan and the beautiful Princess Helen. As for the wolf, he was never seen in those parts again. You see, an enchantress had punished him for his cruelty when he was a prince long ago, a prince who had let his people starve and never cared for anyone but himself. So she had turned him into the wolf. Only by doing a good deed for another would he ever be freed of the spell. Prince Ivan erected a statue in his honor, and of course, he and Princess Helen lived happily ever after. So we've come to the end of our time together today. If you have a story you'd like to hear, please feel free to write me with your request. If you've written a story and would like to share it, let me know as well. I welcome your feedback. You can email me at guima@kciw.org. That's guima@kciw.org. See you next week, same time, same place, but very different stories. We'll travel back to Asia and visit the great country of China, land of mandarins, the Yangtze River, great flying dragons, and singing nightingales. This is Gima saying goodbye and happy reading.